For 16 years, Jon Stewart brought political discourse to a new level on The Daily Show, creating a half-hour comedy show that also energized and informed the political landscape. But the greatest gift he gave his loyal audience was finding a successor who brought not just keen intelligence and a hilarious sense of humor to the show, but a much-needed broader perspective on American politics. It's my friend and colleague, Trevor Noah. Trevor, say hello.
Hello.
Yes, it's Trevor Noah, who's wearing a traditional African, it's like a robe shirt. Right?
I think is that how it's described in the catalog officially, the robe shirt.
Yeah, you never wear African clothes, and I think you're just doing it to mock somebody.
Well, I'm not mocking anybody. I just realized I've never worn, like on a hot day, Western clothing is not particularly comfortable. Uh-huh. And this is something I've realized. I go like, you know what happened is, if you think about it, colonization went around the world and then just threw away all of the facets of every culture that was actually pretty progressive, you know? And if you think about it, like people go, oh, I'm so hot, and they have to take off all their clothes. And whenever I go to the Middle East or Africa, no one's complaining. No one's like taking off their clothes. And then I wore African clothing and Middle Eastern clothing, and I was like, this is really comfortable. So I was like, on a hot day, why not wear the clothing for hot days?
They're asking if you can describe the outfit.
What do you mean describe the outfit?
It's just a gray. It's like a gray, like night. It looks like a. It's look like a. Like
it's
a,
like it's like it's the kind of outfit
Charles
you would
Dickens
wear.
Night shirt.
It's okay. I don't think that's. That's a great description, by the way. But
you should have a candle.
It looks more like you would imagine a typical African businessman, like a North African businessman, to be dressed. You know.
Does it make you feel different? You know how some people go, when I wear this, I feel different.
No, I feel exactly the same.
So it's the same old Trevor.
Yeah, same old me, man.
Now, people don't realize this, you started out in radio.
I did, actually.
And tell me about, because I don't know much about it. I just know that you did radio for a while.
Yeah, I did. You know what it was? It was just a moment of not having a job of anything. And then I heard a radio station was looking for like nighttime hosts, like 3 a.m. I went in, I gave them a demo, and then they
you made
hired
a demo
me.
Like on your own time.
Yeah, I had to find a way, and I made it, and I gave it to them, and then they gave me the job on the spot. They were like, "Yeah, come on in." I don't think anyone else was applying.
Ah,
and they were like, "Let's do it."
Good money, no money.
Was good enough money to survive. I was completely broke. You know when you're like, it changed my life completely.
All right, but you hadn't started doing stand-up then, right?
No, I think I started stand-up 3 weeks after I started radio.
And then, before and then, that, you didn't have a job. You were just
how old was I at the time? 21, 22.
Had you gone to university?
Couldn't afford it, so I was bouncing around trying to find jobs. So my mom said she'll pay for half my university because she didn't want to pay for all of it because she said, I don't want you wasting my money. So waste your money and my money.
Yeah.
Then I was like, okay, cool.
But I don't have any money.
Yeah. She was like, yeah, exactly. Now you understand what this money thing is.
Ah.
And so, then I had to go out and make money to go to school. And then, you know what's weird is when you start making the money, then you go, wait, what's the school for again?
Yeah.
Can someone explain this?
Yeah.
And then you go, why? Like, it's funny, I was reading up on that, how like New York City is struggling with trade. Like, you know, trade jobs, you know, like plumbers and electricians and masons. Like, people don't know how to lay bricks in New York anymore. Did you know this?
Yeah.
This is insane.
And the thing about brick, like bricklaying, electrician, all that stuff, you make a really good living.
You can be super rich.
Yeah.
Like, you see how people make jokes about plumbers?
Those guys make so much money.
And yet everyone wants to be an accountant. Everyone wants to be in IT.
Because plumbers dress bummy.
That's
my
thing.
Problem is I dress bummy too, and people like you don't realize that I'm making a good living. Look, Trevor, now let's talk about, all right, so your story is obviously extremely interesting. You grew up you're born in South Africa.
Yes.
Give me some details.
Just a quick story. So, I was born in South Africa during apartheid. I was born from a mixed family, me being the mixed one in the family. My mother is a black woman, Xhosa woman, South African. My father, Swiss, from Switzerland. And they met in South Africa during this time. And, like, my mom was breaking the law. She didn't care. She was like, she literally just was like, I want to break the law because this is a ridiculous. This was her form of protest.
So she liked your dad, but like she also enjoyed breaking the law.
Yeah, she was like, I like this guy, and I like even more the fact that liking him is against the law. This is good. So
so a black woman and a white man weren't allowed to date.
A black anything and a white anything weren't allowed to date. Like Dalmatians were illegal in South Africa. I'm kidding. but I don't think we had Dalmatians actually. It was illegal across the board. It was miscegenation laws, you know.
So if they were caught together holding hands,
yeah, that's arrested. That's straight up. If you are the black person, you're most likely to spend more time in jail during that time. White people were fined. You could be deported as well. It was a very serious offense. It was like the fundamental law of the land.
And were a lot of people flouting the law, or were there a lot of people like your mom or not?
No, they weren't. No, it wasn't a common thing. There were enough people doing it, but for the most part, people stayed in their lanes.
Okay, so your mother gets pregnant, and like, does your father go to the hospital?
No, he doesn't. He can't. He doesn't go to the hospital. He's not on my birth certificate. When I was born, I come out of my mom. I look much lighter than my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an awkward moment where the doctor's like, what is this?
Yeah.
Who's this baby from? You know, and then
this baby is an imposter.
And then my mom tells the story of how like the doctor just like looked around the operating room, like just looked around like, you know, when everyone goes, And then my mom, she spun some story about how the father of her child was from Swaziland, which is a tiny landlocked country inside South Africa. And she was like, oh, and he's basically an albino, and that's why Trevor's this light, and dad's from another country, that's why he's not here. And then they were just like, yeah, okay, we'll take that.
Then she created a diversion, grabbed you, and ran out of the room. Look over there. Here's what I always, and we talk about this at the show, in full disclosure, I do work on The Daily Show. I consult, I work 1 week per month, like The Daily Show reserves. We talk about on the show about how, because when you hear South Africa, there are many South Africas.
Yes,
there's like Durban and Cape Town, and nice, you know.
Yeah.
Corporate,
it's like
South Africa.
People don't realize that. I think there's many Africas. There's many, you know. I realized that when I came to the U.S., although you're exposed to the U.S. When you're from another country. Mm-hmm. So you have an idea of the South. You have an idea of the East Coast, the West Coast. You have an idea of random places, you know, Minnesota and Maine and, you know. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't realize that about the Africas. Like people go, oh, do you get offended when people make jokes about animals in the streets? Then I go, no, because there are animals in the streets sometimes, but there are also Bentleys and Lamborghinis. So it's a weird world where the two can coexist.
But what I think people don't realize is you grew up in a township, right?
Yeah.
Like extremely poor. Like you lived in a copper house or something.
Yeah, basically. Well, I think we were lucky. We had a bit of brick. We had brick and then a tin roof.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
Just one room, two rooms?
When we started, it was two rooms. So it was the living room / dining room / kitchen / everything room. And then that was the kids' bedroom as well at night. And then the other room was where the adults would sleep.
And how many of you were there?
It's about seven. Yeah. Seven people, yeah. And then you just live there and then, you know.
And were you, by the way, this is Neil Brennan. I'm filling in for Lena Lopate, and I'm speaking to Trevor Noah, host of The Daily Show. Now, did you feel like...
Do you have
like,
to say that in case someone just tuned in, right?
You remember radio?
Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah,
so you got to remind people just in case.
What they're doing.
Hey, if you just tuned in, this is Leonard Lopate's show. You have not tuned into the wrong station. Yeah. Imagine how weird it must be because they're hearing your voice and my accent.
Yeah.
People are like, what's going on?
They think they're picking up some weird frequency.
Yeah. People feel like the Russians have tapped it. Like, yeah, you go like, what's going on?
Yeah.
What station is this?
So did you feel like, but you were always a funny kid, I would assume.
Yeah, I was.
Did you feel like, I'm going to maybe do some with comedy?
No, there was no comedy because there's no free speech.
Oh, that's the other thing that I love about South Africa. There was no comedy until... There was literally no stand-up comedy until what year?
I'd say until, like, professionally. Let's say it wasn't allowed until 1994. And then it wasn't a thing until like 1996, '97, '98. You know, that's when it slowly started. But stand up, a guy on stage just talking about whatever he wants, that wasn't a thing. That
because
was illegal.
The government wouldn't allow it.
Free speech was illegal. It's like searching for Sugar Man. That was that whole story. His music seemed to be speaking out against the government and the man, and that's why it was banned in South Africa. So any song, any idea that was considered to be inciting the masses against the government was banned. And so, you know, books were redacted and songs were, you know, were censored. And so comedy is the worst. I mean, there's no script, there's no nothing. You can't trust anyone on a microphone.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that didn't exist. It just didn't exist.
Okay. So then you start, how did you start doing stand-up?
It was random. I was...
Because a lot of most stand-up stories is I always wanted to do it, and then I wrote some jokes, and then I went to the open mic night and signed up. They called my name. I went on stage, and your story is different.
Yeah, my story is I was living with my cousin and a friend of ours. They had started going to this little night that was at a restaurant, and it was a comedy night once in a blue moon. And then we had just moved in together. We were living in a house, and they said, hey, come with us to this comedy night. And I was like, what's a comedy night? Do you watch movies? And they were like, no, stand-up comedy. I was like, oh, well, that sounds interesting. Let's go see what this thing is. And so we went, and the guys on stage in like a little corner of the restaurant, and they're telling jokes. And it was a horrible night. Guys were bombing so badly. And then my cousin was a little bit drunk. And so he's like heckling the comedians. And everyone knows each other. It's such a small room. So the comedian comes down and he's like, hey, man, you're being an asshole. Stop saying these things and stop heckling. And my cousin goes, you guys are horrible. He says, it's not easy. And my cousin goes, yeah, well, my cousin's funnier than all of you. You know, he could just go on stage, and throws me under the bus. So the comedian goes, well, why doesn't he get on stage? And then it becomes this whole thing. Long story short, I go on stage. The guy goes, come on stage. See, you know, just do it.
Like challenging you? Or
No. He's like,
okay,
oh,
like if
come
you're
on
so
stage.
Great, come up. Yeah.
Well, not, yeah, saying to my cousin, if he's so great, I'm quiet the entire time. I'm like, why have I been involved
like,
in this?
I didn't ask for this.
Yeah. And then I got on stage. And then I get on, I don't know what to talk about. So my friend just starts shouting out requests. He's like, tell them the time we went to that party. And I was like, okay. And I told him the story. And then he shouted out another request. And every story, just the audience laughed. And that became how I started. Every show we went to, I went with my group of friends, and then they would just like shout out random things, and then I would tell that story to the audience.
Right.
And then that's how comedy started for me.
This, by the way, will all be included in your book, which you have coming out.
No.
It's not in your book?
No. Okay. This is in my book. No.
All right. Well, this will be included on the Leonard Lopez show. When
this is an exclusive, Neil Brennan.
But this is, thank you very much.
This is an exclusive.
Okay. So then you do stand up. You get very well known in South Africa. You're the preeminent comedian of South Africa, I'd say, correct?
I guess.
And then you start touring internationally.
Yeah.
And then you came to the States. You were very popular internationally. Then you came to the States. And how did you find the States?
I was lucky, because what happened was the only reason I went international was because there were great comedians who came from other countries to South Africa. So it was an Australian comedian who said, come to Australia, you know, and made it happen. It was a British comedian who said, come to England, that you should come out and do. And these are all people I met in South Africa. The same thing happened with the United States. I was performing with Bobby Lee.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know him from, he was on Mad TV and stuff.
Yeah,
I was performing with Bobby Lee, Pablo Francisco, a bunch of guys, and they were doing a comedy festival. And these guys were like, dude, why don't you come to America? You're hilarious. And I was like, I'm from Africa. You guys, like, these are Africa jokes.
Yeah.
You know, you see the clothes I wear.
I'm wearing
the clothes.
Shirt robe.
People won't relate to this.
Yeah.
And then they were like, no, come to America. You're very funny. And because of them, people called me from the U.S., you know, agents and managers. They're like, hey, our clients are telling us about you. Would you like to come out to America? And then it was an American friend of mine who was making a documentary, David Meyer, who was making a documentary about comedy and its role in South Africa. And he put on a show. He said, come to America, and I'll put on a show for you in L.A. And I did it on Olympic. It was at the iOS Improv.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then some random show advertised on Facebook. People came. No one knew who I was. Had a great show. And then I was like, well, maybe I could do it.
All right. Well, we got to, I'm going to break.
You do that.
I hope you're happy. If you're listening, you probably recognize the voice of Trevor Noah. He's a comedian, actor, and host of The Daily Show. We'll talk more after the break. Later on in the show, director Kim Snyder discusses her documentary Newtown about some of the people affected by the 2012 shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School, and we'll be joined by one of those people. And then Jonathan Safran Foer talks about his new novel called Here I Am. I'm Neil Brennan, in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org, and we'll be back for more right after the break. Hi, Neil Brennan here, filling in for Leonard Lopate. I'm sitting with my friend and colleague, Trevor Noah, host of The Daily Show. All right, so let's get into that. So how did you get connected with John?
John connected with me in the most random way. I was in London doing shows, and I get a phone call, and the voice on the other side says, hi, is this Trevor Noah? I say, yes, it is. Goes, this is John Stewart. I go,
no one said he was going to call. No one said.
I think someone had agreed to give a number somewhere, but I was like, meh. I tell my people, give anyone my, I don't care.
Yeah.
And I was like, John Stewart? And he goes, yeah, I don't know if you know about me. I'm a host of a little TV show in the United States. And I was like, I'm still waiting for the joke. It's a friend. It's a this. It's a that. I was like, yeah, I know who you are. He's like, oh, okay, good. Well, I don't know if you know, I've got the show. It's called The Daily Show. I was like, yeah, I know The Daily Show. He's like, well, as you should.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, it's him. And he said, hey, man, I saw your stand-up online. I saw your videos, and I would love for you to pop into the show sometime and just hang out and see if we could do something together. I was like, I was like, thank you very much, but the answer is no. I'm doing shows in London, and I'm touring the world. Thank you very much. I much appreciate it. And he was like, oh, just pop in. You know, there's something about you that reminds me of myself. And I just thought we could have a good time. If you ever get a chance, pop in. I was like, thank you. I'll take you up on your offer if I ever pop in. But like 6 months later, I was in New York. And then, you know, his people reached out to my people. They're like, is Trevor in New York? They're like, why doesn't he pop in? I was like, okay. I went to the studio, met John. We hung out. And we just hit it off almost immediately. Just started riffing. You know, there's people where you meet them, even as comedians, you meet them and your comedy rhythms match.
Yeah.
You know, like you and I have that, you know, there's certain people where you just get together and you're like, oh, we click together. And that was myself and John. And we had so much fun that John was like, well, let's do this on the show. And I was like, I don't know. I'm not smart enough for your show, man. I see what you guys are doing. This seems intense. I don't know what's going on. What's a caucus? This is weird. And he was like, no, just come on and we'll hang out and we'll chat. And then we put it together and we made my first segment on the show.
Which was the Spot the Africa?
Yeah, Spot the Africa.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little introductory piece. It was fun. And it did really well.
Yeah.
You know, it was really, really fun. Did well online, did well on the show. And then John was like, let's do another one. And so I came back and then he was like, what do you want to talk about this time? And I wanted to talk about Boko Haram and how that week people were marching for Je Suis Charlie. You know, and then Boko Haram was nowhere in the news. And, you know, and John was like, you should do it. Let's do it on the show. And we did that on the show and it did well. And John was like, this is great. You just come and hang out all the time.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, this is great. And so, and then the third time I went on, John was like, do a lighter piece this time. I don't want people to think you're only the guy who does like dismal death. And, you know, and I was like, okay, we'll have a fun piece. So we did something there. And honestly, I was just having a great time. I was learning from John. He's super smart. He made that show look way easier than it is.
That's the thing, because I never worked. I started working with you on it 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I'm impressed with you by with you and with John as well is, you know, the hosting and the standing out there and having the suit on and all that stuff. That's like the truly the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
You don't see all of the work.
No.
That all the editing, all the ideas, all the jokes, all the fine tuning that goes, and that is no one can do it except the host.
Yeah,
really.
It is what defined The Daily Show is what makes it so hard, and that is it is the perspective and the views of the host. It's not walk in, tell the jokes, leave.
Yeah,
it's your point of view, it's your ideas, it's your perspective, and then. You're also living in a world where, strangely enough, I was fascinated by it. I was like, how is it that you live in a country where the comedy show is viewed with more scrutiny than the topics that it is scrutinizing.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, if we say something wrong on the show, people are like, oh, you should be ashamed and you should, that was wrong, incorrect. Like, I'm talking about the tiniest things, yeah. Even in a joke. You know, it'd be like, that's incorrect. Technically, Smurfs never lived in that kingdom. And you're like, oh, wow, okay, you guys take this seriously. And then you see politicians go on TV and lie all the time. And people are like, well, that's part
of the game.
That's just Trump being Trump, you know, Trump being him. And so I learned very quickly how difficult the show was. But, you know, John and I worked together for a bit. And then he announced that he was leaving. That came out of the blue for everyone. And so
you were showing up a couple days every once in a while.
Yeah. I was just coming and hanging out for a week. I was doing what you're doing now, basically. Yeah. I'd just come, hang out, and then leave. You know.
Yeah.
And then John announced his departure, and I remember I was just thinking to myself, oh well, good luck to whoever takes it over, or I guess the show's ending. I don't know how this works, but I'm on my way.
Well, you know what I thought? I bet they offered it to Trevor.
Are you serious?
Didn't I text you that?
That's ridiculous, though.
Didn't I text you?
No, I think you didn't. I think you didn't. I think you asked it to me when there was like a short list of things, when it was like actually in the mix. But I'm glad you didn't text it to me earlier.
Okay.
Yeah.
It would have thrown you off or something?
Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have scared me away. I would have just run to Africa and like hidden.
Look, I've been there. Wouldn't be the first time, Trevor. Wouldn't be the first time.
So then that happened, and then, you know, John and I chatted, and he said, look, I told them to put your name in the hat. I said, I don't know why you would do that. And John said, because you remind me of myself. You're the same age as I was, or similar age when I started. I was in the same place in my life. We have similar views. We get to the same place in different ways, and you fascinate me. So, and he said, what I like about you the most is you're not going to try and do my show,
right?
Which is what I like about you the most. So you're going to let me retire my thing, and then you're going to start something new and work towards a completely different idea.
And okay, so talk about how that's been in terms of getting sort of corralling the show and getting it more. I want to talk about the directions you want to take the show in, because I think it's a good direction. I think it's worth talking about publicly.
Well, I think the hardest thing I came to realize was how much resistance there is and how afraid people are of change. And we're all afraid of change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a visceral reaction. You know, I always say to people, I came in with the lofty ambitions. I had that Obama Guantanamo swag when I came in. You know, I was like, I'm going to get it done. 100 days. No,
yeah.
I'm going to get it done. Shut it down. It's going to be gone. And then you go, wow, this is harder than I thought.
Yeah.
Because people are afraid. They go, are you going to throw away our institution? Is that what? And you're like, no, I'm just going to change it. And they go, well, that's, what does change mean? What is this global perspective you speak of?
It's like when a sports team gets a new logo. And
like,
this is the worst logo.
And you're everyone is resistant to change.
Yeah.
You know, the human body is the same thing. Give it a new kidney, the body rejects it even though the kidney is helping it. Because on my side, I came to realize, you know, what John was doing was done. John even said it. He goes like, it's done. You know, I'm done skewering Fox. I'm done being in this world. I want to go home now. And I was like, I can't do the same thing. I can't and I don't see things the same way. I get to the same place.
Well, that's the thing people don't understand
about you.
But I see
things differently.
Yeah, it's like you don't loathe Fox News. You're not an angry guy naturally.
No. No, I, you know why I don't loathe it? Here's what I don't understand is why people get angry about a thing that they have a choice to watch.
Yeah.
That genuinely fascinates me. You know, when people say that to me in the streets, they go, did you see the thing? I understand anger. I understand why you should be angry about certain things. And there are still things on Fox News or any news network or even online that we go into. Because there are certain ideas that are so pervasive, they work their way into the mainstream. But I'm of the mind where I go like, you can't chase after just random people for saying everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go, once it starts tapping into a world where it becomes destructive and where it starts going into your world, that's when I feel like I say something or I try and do something about it. But I approach it in a very different way. And that's where John and I connected. And that's literally the directive he gave me. I said, what should the show be? And he said, the show should be what you think it needs to be. Don't try and make my show. Yeah. Everyone's going to try and get you to make my show. And what I like about you is that you're not going to try and make my show because you don't idolize me. You just like me.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'll do that then. And he was completely right. He's like a sage. Everything he said came true. Everything.
Yeah.
He's like, they're going to try to get you to hate me. They're going to try to compare the two of us. They're going to try. Like, every single thing he said came true.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's so funny when you get people saying the things. They go, John would have done it like this. John wouldn't have. And then it's like you don't even know John, do you?
It's like, I spoke to him today.
Yeah. It's very
and
funny
he
when
didn't say any of that
when
stuff.
you go like you don't know him.
Yeah.
You don't. It's an interesting place to be in. So so I've learned I have to try and create the best show. I'm trying to create a show. Over time, we'll progress. I mean, this election is insane. But I'm excited to get to a place where we're looking at more of the cause as opposed to the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like America, for the most part, is a very symptomatic nation. Americans like to go, black people are being shot, stop shooting black people.
Right.
Which makes sense. But then not enough time is spent going, why are people getting shot? Why are black people more likely to get shot? Why are the police shooting so quickly? Why do the police even have guns? What is the society? How, just breaking it all the way down, down to the core, and going, ah, it starts here. It starts at a school. It starts with a parking ticket. It starts with an idea. It starts with, where does it start? You know, if you went to a doctor that just kept on giving you medicine and never actually try to find the cause, you'd never get better. And I like that. That's how I think.
Right.
And so that's an idea for me where I look at the future of the show. I go, I like to think broader than just what is happening, but rather what caused this to happen.
You're listening to Trevor Noah. This is the Leonard Lopate show. It's being filled in by Neil Brennan. That was one of the worst ideas I've ever done in my entire life.
Because you did it backwards.
I did it backwards.
You said you're listening to Trevor Noah, which was technically me.
No, I know.
And then you said,
but they were technically listening to you at that point.
Yeah, well, I think I would have gone with, this is the Leonard Lopate show, and you're listening. This is the Leonard Lopate show. I'm Neil Brennan filling
easy,
in.
Is it? Not for, that easy. You thought it was going to
be
a cakewalk.
No, we're dissecting it.
Yeah,
we're dissecting it now, is what we're doing.
So what direction do you, what sort of changes have you implemented? Walk people through the day, because I think that's really instructive and it's
a day at the show?
Yeah.
Wow. So my day starts around 7:30. I wake up and then I try and digest as much news and information as I possibly can for about an hour.
On TV?
No, TV's too slow. TV has just become too slow. TV's also filled with just like talking heads now. It's a weird, I don't understand American news.
They gotta fill segments, man.
Yeah, I don't get the purpose of that anymore. I understand for what they're doing, but let's be honest. Look at this cycle. They bring people on just to fight. The news has become Jerry Springer or Judge Judy. You know, what's your view? My view is that Trump is racist. What's your view? My view is that he's not racist.
All right. Well, we've got 5 minutes. Do you say your talking point?
Exactly.
And you have a talking point as well. Yeah.
And then it's just back and forth, 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 back and forth. I come from a world where the news just reports what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
The people then have to try and make a decision based on those facts. Whereas now fact has become opinion in America. Fact is, it's like, which facts do you subscribe to? And it's like, no, facts are facts.
Yeah.
And they go, I don't like these biased facts. It's like, no, facts can't be biased. They are facts. You know, and that's a problem that you have now. So I can't watch the news in the morning. It takes too long. So I read everything. You know, I read everything. I read The Guardian. I read the New York Times. I'll read everything. Like, I'll read Vox. I'll read The Skim. I'll read any source where I try and get to as many places as possible where I'm just consuming information. Just consuming the information. And then get out of the house, go to the show. We start the morning meeting around 9:15, and that's where we discuss everything.
That's about 20 people sitting around, largely writers.
Yeah, writers, people that are going to work in studio production that are going to get the clips and put the show together.
It's loose. And I will say, you know, having watched the show for a long time, and everyone's really funny.
Oh, yeah. I work
like
with some of the most talented people.
Truly. Yeah. I'm a, like, snob till the cows come on. These people are real. Like, they say stuff that I'm like, man, that is really funny.
Yeah.
And smart, and people have to have a nuanced take. And the point of the meeting, the 9:15 meeting, is to sort of coalesce into a take for the
exactly
for the first
and you
act
and you try
day.
And figure that out. And then you start working on the day, and then, you know, I work on it, so I'll sit with it and write the show with the writers from about 10 a.m. to about 12. We'll sit for 2 hours, and I'll just sit there and write the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then from 12, it goes into production. They'll move it forward, and then I handle other meetings. That's where I'll be going to look at field pieces, you mm-hmm. know, those things that, like, Jordan Klepper does going out, mm-hmm. and I'll go watch those, give notes, get involved in everything that's happening, maybe do a sketch that we're working on, do interviews, do whatever other work needs to be done. And then you go into rehearsal at around 3 p.m., we rehearse, we work on the show, we see what... Because sometimes you can plan the whole thing. Once you see it visually, you're like, oh, this is not working.
We've never spoken about this. Rehearsal, you tend to... go half speed.
Yeah.
Why is that? You want to save it? You'll tend to be like, hey, Trevor Noah, welcome to The Daily Show. So tonight's thing is, and then, okay.
Like, yeah, because I'm not, when I rehearse, so it doesn't matter what I rehearse for. It's funny you say that. I remember when I got to do The Tonight Show with Jay Leno,
mm-hmm.
they were freaked out because I wouldn't rehearse.
Right.
They were like, we need you to do your set for us. And I said, I don't. And they're like, well, how do we know what you're going to do? I was like, well, come to a club and watch me. I'll do right. the 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But I don't rehearse. I don't. Yeah. And when people, I don't mean I don't practice. I practice by doing yeah. it. But I don't, because it's artificial. The one thing I don't want to do is get to the show and not feel what's happening. I want to talk to the audience and I want to feel, oh, that didn't make sense when I said it to you. It made sense on paper. I need to reiterate that point. I need to connect with you further with that opinion. And so when I'm going through the rehearsal, I also don't like, you know...
Showing your cards, so to speak?
No, not necessarily. It's just I believe in giving jokes the best opportunity to succeed. And so I believe it's a weird, I know it's a superstition, but I feel like jokes are imbued with laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people laugh at a joke, the stronger it becomes. You remember the laugh. I always say that you remember the laugh and the joke remembers its own laugh.
Right.
And so the better a joke does, the stronger that joke becomes without you doing anything yeah. to it. And when you walk out there, the audience sort of feels that other people have laughed at this joke. It's the strangest thing. It's the same way like when you meet like real superstars, like real, real superstars. I always say you look into their eyes and when you shake their hands, it feels like everyone that has ever screamed and cheered for them, they are still carrying yeah. with them. It resonates. So yeah. when you meet Will Smith, you go like, are people screaming right now? What is this feeling? It is yeah. everyone that has ever screamed for him
it's
in
like
his life.
It's like a charisma that's built into the
yes.
Built
it, into it, the it exists apart from your general charisma. And that's what I feel happens to a joke. And so when I rehearse, I'm just trying to find structure and words and places where we can work. I also don't want the performance to cloud whether or not a joke is good or an idea is good or bad. So if you shout a joke, it works. Sometimes yeah. if you shout an idea, it's like, yeah, that worked. It's like, no, you just shouted it. So just say it. Just yeah. do it. And that's how we rehearse the show. Then go
and then,
in.
And then, yeah. And then we rewrite it yeah. very quickly. Yeah. I mean, not very quickly. I have to no. do this very quickly. We rewrite it in yeah. 2.5 hours. Then you do the show.
Then do the show.
Then there's a bit of editing. And then the thing is, and then it's like, what are we doing tomorrow?
Then it's you don't have any... after the greatest shows, you're done.
Yeah. Speaking of, yeah, like this one. Trevor Noah will be doing 2 shows at the Beacon Theater on Saturday, November 5th. The early show is sold out, but tickets are still available for the late show, which is usually the better one, by the way.
I think they're both good. I was
no,
trying
but
to figure
the,
out.
The late show is usually the better one. So go to the if you.
Well, it's the only show you can get tickets for.
The early show is great, but the late show is usually better. For tickets and info, go to wnyc.org/lopate. Trevor. Also, you got a book coming out called Born a Crime,
yeah.
which will. The stand-up part was exclusive, but the stuff about your mom and all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it's my life. It's my family. It's me growing up. And it ties into everything that happened in my world, I think, even up until now.
Yeah, and The Daily Show airs every night at 11 and then again on the internet forever.
Forever.
Trevor Noah, we did it.
Thank you so much, Neil Brennan. Thanks for having me.